Before I start talking about the things I wanted to present today, something occurred to me this morning. Someone mentioned, what is improvisation? Do we have the same definition? And what about joint improvisation? So I thought about a formula that I like, that maybe one of the purpose of this workshop is to jointly improvise the definition of joint improvisation. So I'm going to try to add a little part to that today. And I usually don't dedicate a part of my talk to describing who I am. But it seems relevant today because first, Erin had a certain difficulty to present me. And also because if you remember this morning when we did the field thing, I was one of the moving elements because I'm always trying to go to a place where I haven't been before. And I don't necessarily like labels, like people trying to put a label on me. And whenever someone does that, I try to do something to contradict that label right away. I think it's very important. Another way to look at it is when you look at frontier, a frontier between two things. Most people think of a line separating two areas. For me, it's not what a frontier is. A frontier is not a line. It's usually a zone, an area. And you are on one side, you are on the other side, but you don't go directly from one to the other one. You go through a lot of different steps in the process. And I usually try to work in this area because to me that's the most exciting part. It's where it's not really well defined. It's where you can actually make new connections. I'm going to speak about making new connections today. And so that's really how I envision creativity on the artistic side, but that's also how I envision research, trying to make new connections. And obviously you make connections with people. And because you connect to people, then you connect to new ideas, and then you explore a new territory, and so on. So I'm going to say a few words about who am I. I'm not going to try to define myself, but just give you some elements for you to understand the place from where I'm talking today. Then I'm going to speak a little bit about remapping and kind of intuition idea that I have and that I want to explore. I'm going to speak about joint improvisation, and then I'm going to extend it and connect what I define as joint improvisation to some other concepts that are really important to me. So when I have to define myself, I usually say that I am an artist researcher. And I try to defend that point of view in the academic world, which is not an easy task. But for me, I'm really someone who is interested in science and art, and I really don't see the point of having to choose between the two. And of course, my education made me choose between the two, and I started choosing science as a profession, but I continue my artistic practice, and it's only after a while that I realized that actually maybe I could do both, and maybe I could define myself as doing both. And if you look into the history of ideas, until not so long ago, it was common for people to be artists and researchers, to be inventors and artists, and so on. It's only until recently that we became very specialized. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be. I think it's important, and I think that the complexity of things maybe create the necessity to become specialist on some things. I'm just saying it's not my personality, it's not my nature, so I prefer a different approach. So in artist researcher, you have two things. You have artist, of course. So today I'm going to speak about three different things. I'm going to speak about music. So I have some practice in jazz, in singing, and in a group called the Aquarians that I'm going to mention a bit later because it's relevant to joint improvisation. Dancing. So I have, again, a lot of practices in dance. I'm not really an expert in any of them, but I am an, we say in French, amateur éclairé. I don't know how to translate that in English, but I try to have fun when I do something, and then when I start not having fun anymore, then I move to somewhere else. And usually I come back later, and because I went to other places, I come back with a different frame of mind. And I'm also an actor, among other things. So I'm going to speak about these three things today in terms of improvising. And on the researcher part, I have also a kind of a untypical trajectory because I started in new technologies and more particularly voice technology. Then I moved to linguistics, which is not so far, but still different approaches, different methodology. And I studied languages and a little bit of the cognition of language. And then at some point, because it was very difficult to juggle with like art on one side and science on the other side, I tried to reconcile both of them. And then I switched again and I moved to philosophy of art and aesthetics. And I'm more particularly interested in the creative process, in the impact of new technologies on the creative process, in the spiritual dimension of creativity, in particular contemplative practices, and I'm also very interested in the work of Francisco Varela, mostly because he was someone who was both a scientist and a Buddhist practitioner, and also tried to reconcile two things that appeared not to be reconcilable, which were cognitive sciences and spirit, consciousness. So, remapping, my experience as an improviser. One question first. Who has an improvising practice, whatever that is? Dance, music, something else? Okay, so among you, which one are musicians? And you can, I mean, your hand can be high several times, it's not exclusive. Dancers? Okay, who doesn't have an improvising practice? Or who believes they don't have an improvising practice? Okay. So, my point is they think they don't, but they do. They just don't know it, or don't know it yet. So when I improvise, the idea of improvising, okay, what is improvisation? It's a big question, and I'm not necessarily trying to give the definite answer, but to me, someone said this morning, it's going from chaos to known. I think you said that. And I was making the remark to Laura, that's, for me, that's the exact opposite. It's going from the known to the unknown. So, but it's interesting because we are both saying something true about what improvisation is. But that's a different point of view. And I'm sure if I ask everyone, each of us will have a different definition. But there is something about improvisation is the fact that we don't necessarily know in advance where we are going, or at least not consciously. Sometimes we know, but we are not aware that we know. So there is something about this thing of daring, of taking risk, of going to an unknown territory. And that's very scary. I mean, it can be very scary. But something I noticed is that when you improvise and you are alone, in a way, you are still sort of in control of what you are doing because you are alone and because you tend to go to places that you kind of know, even though sometimes you're going to go a little bit further away, but it's not going to be usually a drastic change. But when you improvise with someone, then you have to go to places you don't know. So there is a drastic change. And it's my experience that I reach this state of not knowing anything at all faster when I'm doing joint improvisation. And my hypothesis is that there might be some correlates in terms of the way my brain is functioning at that moment, which is remapping, which is creating new synaptic connections. We had an interesting talk about that this morning. So that's the idea. And I mean, it's nothing new. It's just related on my own experience and trying to translate it into some kind of process. So what I'm going to try to do today, so I'm not a neuroscientist, even though I'm very interested in the field. So when I work on something like that, I usually try to work with people who are neuroscientists. But what I'm trying to do is to go from what I call from phenomenology to neurophenomenology. So I start from my experience. I try to express it. I try to share it. I try to interview people to see if they can relate to my experience or if there are other ways to speak about it. And then I'm trying to understand how it could work. And then I'm trying to devise maybe some experimental protocol that would bring some knowledge on the way it works. So back to joint improvisation. So I want to explore three areas where I have an intensive practice as an improviser. And I'm going to try to point some differences between the fact to improvise alone and the fact to improvise with someone. So in music, when you improvise as a musician, you can do several things. You can improvise alone, like literally alone. There is nothing else but you and your instrument or your voice, which is an instrument, and then you just improvise anywhere you want to go, depending on the moment, on the mood, on everything. You can also improvise alone, but on music, on a recording. We had an example this morning, so you have some kind of background music, and then you improvise on it. In jazz, you do that a lot. For instance, you have some recordings of piano, battery, drums, and bass, and then you play your solo instrument on top of that. So there is already a big difference between the two, because when you improvise on music, you have a structure, you have a grid, you have some harmonic structure, some rhythmic structure, and even though you can take a lot of freedom from it, it's still there. So you have a kind of like a structure that gives you some direction. And sometimes it's easier to improvise from a structure rather than not having anything at all. And then you have the possibility to improvise with another player or several other players, in which case it's a whole different story, because you have to integrate what the other person is doing. You have to, or you can respond or take another path. But at some point, the goal is to produce music together. So it's to build something together. So some people spoke about it this morning. So in that particular case, what often happens, in my experience at least, is that you reach a moment, or you reach some moments, not all the time, but sometimes, where you are not aware anymore of what is going on. So I call it a trance state. To me, that's what it looks like. Some people call it being in the zone, like sport people call that being in the zone. It's some kind of moment that is kind of magical. You are not necessarily in control or not consciously in control of what is going on. And I'm very curious about that state. What is that state? Like, what is it in terms of awareness, in terms of the experience that you are going through? And what is it in terms of brain functioning? So this is really the thing that I'm interested in, trying to understand that state that, in my experience, reach faster when you do joint improvisation, which is a state of letting go, of like improvising, of maybe a change in consciousness, of whatever. And I'm not saying that all the things I just said are the same, But they are the thing that you hear when you ask people, what is that state? Now, there might be some slight differences between being in a trance or being in a state of complete letting go or and so on. But I'm just like questioning that particular state. In dance, it's the same. I would even say that in dance, your body is even more involved, even though when you play music, your body is also very much involved. And again, in dance, you can do a solo improv, or you can do a solo on music, or you can do an improv with another person or with more people. So my experience with dance, like joint improv, is contact dance. Who is a practitioner of contact dance or has done it already? So contact dance is something very interesting because when you do music, you can choose to follow or not. You have the choice. I don't like it, I don't go there. But when you do contact improv, you have no choice because your body is involved in the movement. The body is in contact with the other person. And if you don't go there, you either hurt yourself or the other person. So in a way, it's like you have to go to that place where you don't control anything anymore. And I actually discovered contact dance in New York while I was doing my acting training. And I realized that it was probably the best class I had ever had about acting, even though it was not in my acting school. Because it's like you have to be so in the moment that the experience teaches you what many classes couldn't teach you. It's like being there, being in the moment, letting go. So again, what is that state? What is that state where you have no choice but going to that place that you don't control anymore? Something I tried also, we did that with Laura Potrovic, who works on me on this kind of projects. We did some movement, dance, improvisation, but we also added a layer of free associating words to it. And that's very interesting because we did it solo. So I dance, I improvise, and I free associate. And then we did it together. And again, when you do it with someone, then you have to respond to the words that the person is speaking. And you cannot predict them. So it creates new association. So maybe it creates new synaptic connection. Maybe there is some remapping going on. But it's also happening in your body. And the two combined are very interesting. So, and in acting, actors use improvisation a lot as well. I mean, not all of them, but some of them, at least the training I received, use improvisation a lot. We use it in several ways. I use it when I work on a character. So I'm alone, I'm in a room by myself, I'm trying to explore my character, and I'm going to put my character in different situations, trying to explore things, trying to find out things about my character. And the very interesting thing about it is that you might think that an actor improvises depending on what he already knows about the character, but that's not the case. It's actually more something that is going on in spite of yourself. So you explore your character and you find things about your character, but you find them physically, yes, you find them in your brain as well, because if you move, then your brain is active and so on. But I mean, it's not some conscious thing. It's not like, oh, I decide that my character is going to work that way. It's more like suddenly you work that way and then you realize that maybe your character is working that way. So we also do improv as a group. Like if you work on a play, for instance, on a scene, then a lot of the time what we do is we improvise the scene before we know the words. So we kind of know what is going on, we kind of know the situation, and then we improvise. And because we improvise with someone else, then we have to react, to respond to what the other person is doing and saying as well. So these are all situations where the improvisation, the joint improvisation, bring you to a place of not controlling, a place of having to let go, a place where sometimes you get to a special state, state of consciousness, state of trance. And these things are really something that I want to explore. And so we are trying to devise a research project with Laura Petrovic, where we could explore that from different aspects. Explore it from the phenomenological point of view by trying to express what was going on inside by interviewing people. That's one thing. We would like to explore it with movement captures, so kind of similar to what we saw this morning. And then we would like to explore it from the cognitive aspect of things, which is much harder. So it's harder for one main reason. It's not harder on the technological aspect anymore, because now you can have some EEG helmets that are wireless, and you can move with them. But the problem is movement is very complicated to analyze once you get the data later. So we are still in the process of discussing about it. I'm working with Michel Levan-Cuyen at the ICM, which is the Institute of Research on Brain and Spine at the Hôpital de la Salpêtrière in Paris. And if any of you get any idea about how to do it, please come and talk to me. Because we would like to correlate our experience and what the movement detection can teach us with the way the brain functions. And the idea is to, ideally, what we would like to do is to compare when we do a solo improv and when we do a joint improv and see where the differences are. And also, to go a bit beyond that, if I'm trying to explore the state that we are in when we are doing joint improv, I have several things that come to mind. I already mentioned that there is a relationship to me between improvising and letting go. So what is improvising? What is letting go, of course? But letting go in the sense of exploring the unknown, of not being consciously in control anymore, of playing a game, the game that the other person is proposing. There is also this relationship between being in a trance, being in the zone, and being in the moment. And maybe there is something very interesting, because in English you have two words. You have awareness and consciousness. In French you have the same word to translate both of them. So to me there is a difference between awareness and consciousness. And maybe there is something about going from modified awareness to modified consciousness in that process. I don't know, it's just a proposition. But when I think about it, I can think of other situations in my practice where I'm in a similar state. I'm not sure it's the same state, and that would be very interesting to investigate, but when I meditate, for instance. When you are in a meditative state, sometimes you reach a point where something else happens. Some kind of, again, for lack of a better expression, a modified state of consciousness. And so it could be also interesting to compare to the brain activity of someone in meditation. There is some work by Tanya Singer and Mathieu Ricard on that topic, for instance. When you do yoga, because with yoga your body is involved, but it's your body in a slow movement, so it's probably easier to explore than when you do a dance improvisation. But you also have this kind of state when you do things like hypnosis or auto-hypnosis, or when you do what some people call the shamanic journeying, which is also a kind of hypnotic experience. So you have a lot of similar experiences that can bring you in this area that I'm very interested in. So this is very preliminary. It's more like practitioner questioning the experience that is going through inside and trying to correlate that to maybe some measurable things, which bring me back to the question of Laura this morning. What can't we measure and what can we measure? So to summarize, who am I? So I'm speaking from an artist researcher position, so someone who is trying to combine the two together. Exploring remapping, that's something that I have the feeling I can do through joint improvisation and more easily than when I improvise alone. And so I want to explore this joint improvisation through an art research project. So it's not art, it's not research, it's art research. And I would love to invent a word that combines the two into only one word. And maybe what is beyond joint improvisation is a kind of trance state. And to conclude, what is creativity? That's a big topic. So how creativity and joint improvisation are related. Is creativity creating new neurons? Is it creating new synaptic connections? Of course, the answer depends how old you are. But there are a lot of things we didn't know a few years ago about the brain, and we are discovering new things every day. And the other thing that is very important to me, because all in all, when we do this kind of work, we are also thinking about the implications of that work. And of course, the implications that come to mind right away are in terms of education. What education model do we have, and do they respect this knowledge about how the brain, body, spirit work? And in healing, Michelle works a lot with epileptic people, for instance. And so this kind of work is very interested in, because there is a lot of knowledge to gain from these experiences. And again, that brings back to the question that of complexity that we spoke about this morning. I think we are now at a time where neurosciences are exploring more and more complex matters, because we are more working on the synergy of the neural networks now than we are on trying to define one network among the other ones. So thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions. Or comments.
It is a comment rather than a question. So I thought you might want to look at, I can't pronounce it, Csikszentmihalyi. Csikszentmihalyi, who's got this concept of flow, which I think is largely metaphorical. I'm not sure quite how helpful it is, but it's quite similar to some of the things you're saying, and it's the sort of trade-off between skilled performance and anxiety. And there's a sort of, you know, there's supposed to be a bit in the middle, which is great.
I saw that mentioned in different talks, so it's kind of on my list somewhere to investigate, yeah. Thank you.
I find very interesting your point of departure. It's more like an anthropologist who starts from his own experience and then go to neuroscience, because often you find the opposite pathway. Okay, we have these little bits we are curious about, but it doesn't have the perspective of the whole. So at the end, you are with more questions. More and more questions, but the experience is still something whole, which is there and can guide you. So I think that's very, very beautiful to research that way. And also it opens that place which can mediate like between like a personal experience and a scientific or medical point of view. And that's actually where we in somatic education work with Feldenkrais, Alexander, BMC, body-mind centering, and we work like in this gray zone in between personal experience, which you could just say, okay, it's personal, it's too complicated, we cannot really say much about that. Or then the neuroscience or medicine, which wants to quantify everything. But there's so much in between, and that's, I think, very interesting to explore.
Thank you. It's very interesting because I'm just realizing that I've been trained in Alexander Technik, and I read the books by Alexander, and that's exactly what he did. And now I realize that he might be one of my inspirations in the process. So yeah, because he spent many years just exploring himself in front of a mirror and trying to understand things. And then once he got some understanding, he tried to propagate it to different fields. So yeah, thank you for the connection.
I have two comments.
Yeah, new synaptic connection. Sorry.
I'd like to comment on the definitional issue that's been brought up several times, what improvisation is. I believe there is a good reason to hold apart what I like to call having to improvise and wanting to improvise. The first being an ongoing response to adaptive pressures, which often occurs in interaction for obvious reasons, and wanting to improvise more in the aesthetic sense of creating novelty, perhaps, or interesting variation. Mm-hmm. And I think the mechanisms of those two might be pretty different.
Yeah,
and that also connects, secondly, with what you said about the remapping issue. I'm not sure it actually always needs remapping in the strong sense, especially, or maybe to put it succinctly, speaking language is a pretty good example. We don't have to invent new words or learn new words to constantly come up with new sentences we've never created before, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
true.
There's a kind of a soft assembling combinatory structure in our generative capacities we already have, mm-hmm, that enables us to create something either situatively fitting or even new. So the question is remapping at a neural level necessarily involved in either both or any of those two levels I've mentioned?
No, yeah, that's interesting because it can be a higher level operation going on and not necessarily remapping a synaptic connection. Or it might be making some common activation of different neural network or areas that were not necessarily activating at the same time before. I agree. There are probably more than one possibility and explanation to what is going on. As far as the having to improvise or wanting to improvise, something I forgot to mention is for me, and I refer to the book by Stefan Nachmanovic called Free Play. I don't know how many people know that book. Yeah, it's really an amazing book about the notion of playing, having fun. Like, you create, according to him, but I completely agree, you create only when you are playing. So when you play, it means you improvise freely. It means you are doing it because you want to, because it's fun. As opposed to you have to improvise because you are in a framework where something is going on and you have no choice. So, but again, it's not so much the frame that is important that your frame of mind. So if you are in a frame of mind of playing like a kid, then something is going on. Something is being created. But I agree that you mentioned novelty. I'm not sure novelty should be the aim when improvising. I agree with you. Sometimes it happens, but I don't think it should be the aim. To me, the aim is just to have a shared good time, actually. So, or even when I'm alone, when I improvise alone, the goal is really to have a good time. And because I'm having a good time or trying to have a good time, sometimes it doesn't work, but because I'm having a good time, then I get into a playful state of mind, and then something usually unusual happens.
I just want to let you know that Asaf told me that we only have 5 minutes, so maybe we take the 2 questions and then you answer. Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Hello. I've been searching. I've been questioning same kind of field, I think, but I have more of the background of the dance and theater, so I have not been into this neuroscience things. And I find it from learning techniques, for example, of dancing, we have techniques to let go. So we have, like, we use techniques to let ourselves go and not be injured. And I just noticed that more and more you have experience, you can decide where to let go and when to catch up. So, like, my right arm should be letting go for, like, 5 seconds and I catch. So there is not only the state of let go, but there is many kinds of state of letting go. Like, I noticed that people in trance, they are also conscious about the cameras that they are filming. So, which I saw the video of somebody who were pointing the camera when they were recording her in trance. And there is this, like, a whole consciousness about your research about meditation. Also, like, in a state of meditation, it's not like losing your consciousness, but like opening your consciousness. So it's not probably letting go, but maybe there's something about being, like, catching everything that is going on. So this word letting go, I just have a question about this definition of word. Mm-hmm.
You want to take the other question now, or I answer that one first?
You have 3 minutes to work.
So let's hear the second question, then maybe I can try to...
So I was more commenting a bit on your final thoughts about creativity, where you were saying creating new connections. I think the way that I tend to think about it, and I wanted your impression on that, is that it's unlikely that while you're creating, you're actually creating the novel new connections in your brain. I find it in a way more likely that you explore less dominant connections in your brain. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of basic work on selective attention in the visual system that says that when you really focus on things, what happens is that you set your brain more in a winner-take-all mode, where if you have two populations of neuron, one a little bit more active, and the selective attention, the brain will maximize the difference to make you see one thing clearly. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you relax, or if it's in the periphery of your attention, you can actually leave the multiple populations in more similar activity states. Mm-hmm. So I tend to think of creativity more in terms of exploring less dominant connections. And then when you do it jointly, of course, you have the advantage of having somebody else tipping you into chains of connections that you wouldn't normally follow so much by your own, because it's not the dominant one.
Interesting. So quickly, trance versus consciousness, letting go. I agree with you that when we say we are in a trance or in a state of letting go, there is always a part of us that is conscious, to some degree at least. So it's not so much about shutting down the consciousness than it is to make some space for something else. So transition to your comment. I think it depends on how we define creativity and the type of activity, because I agree with you that a lot of the time, if you practice something and you are an expert in that thing, then there is already a strong network with some paths that are stronger than others. But most probably you're going to evolve in that space, and it's going to be harder and harder to go to a place where there is nothing or almost nothing. It's very different if you are in a field where you are not an expert, where you have the beginner's mind, as they say in Zen Buddhism, because it's then you have to invent everything, you have to learn everything. And maybe that's a different sort of creativity. And it's not because you are not an expert that you cannot be creative. In research, we see that every day, like someone who is not from a field listen to something in a field they don't know, and suddenly they have an idea that is apparently very naive, but in fact a very good one. It's not always the case, of course, but yes and no. I mean, I don't know. But that would be very interesting to find a way to figure it out, but I don't know how. But yeah, interesting comment. I agree that that's two different things, and I don't know which one is which.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.